seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Now, the trial of the NHS nurse Lucy Letby is continuing at Manchester Crown Court.
She wept as she told the court that she was devastated at being accused of murdering
7 young babies and the attempted murder of 10 others.
Asked by her defence lawyer if she'd done anything wrong, no, she replied.
She told the jury that she'd only ever done her best to care for the babies.
This is a podcast about one of the most anticipated criminal trials for years. It involves the most shocking of allegations, the alleged murders and attempted murders of tiny, premature babies at the hands of a neonatal nurse whose very job it was to look after them.
Lucy Letby is on trial at Manchester Crown Court, accused of killing 7 newborns and injuring 10 more at the Countess of Chester Hospital in Cheshire.
The jury has now been sitting for almost 10 months. The prosecution and defence have finished outlining their cases and the jury have been deciding whether Lucy Letby is guilty or not guilty of the 22 charges that she faces.
I'm Liz Hull, Northern Correspondent for The Mail. I will be in court to report on the case as it develops.
And I'm Caroline Cheatham, a broadcast journalist. Every week, we'll examine what's happened and bring you the details behind the headlines.
This is the trial of Lucy Letby.
So Liz, the jury's now been out considering their verdicts for 11 days.
Yes, today is their 11th day of deliberations. As we've said before, the judge has told them they're under no pressure of time to make a decision. So we've got no idea how long they'll take.
So all we can do, as we've said before, is to carry on waiting.
Welcome to episode 48, Our Best Guests.
As we've told you before in previous episodes, we won't do anything in this podcast to put the integrity of a fair trial at risk, which means while the jury are out deliberating, we can't discuss what's happened at court or recap any of the evidence that we've heard.
So this week we thought we'd do something a bit different. Over the past 47 episodes, we've interviewed some fantastic guests who've given us their fascinating insights into the courts, journalism and media law. And we've put together a compilation of some of our favourite moments, which we hope you enjoy. The first clip we're playing is from back in episode 2, when we spoke to David Banks. He's the former court reporter and media law expert. He explained why sometimes the early reports from a trial and the headlines they generate may sometimes appear biased to the general public. And that's because the prosecution always goes first, so that's all journalists have to report on. The defence case comes along later, once the prosecution have presented their evidence, and it's up to journalists to make sure they report this as well, so we provide balanced and fair coverage to our readers and listeners. Here's what David had to say.
The first days of a trial like this, or any big criminal trial,
is all prosecution. And so that's all the media can report. And so the headlines reflect that. And it can seem that the media might be possibly taking sides or assuming guilt or anything like this. But if you read them carefully, they're always attributing what they're reporting to the prosecution, that this is an allegation being made, this is a prosecution case. And there will be an indication in there that this is a continuing trial. You do get that brief opening statement from the defense counsel sort of giving an indication of what they might be saying around the evidence. But, you know, the jury and the public watching and listening and reading do have to wait sometimes, quite some time, until we get round to the defense case and any defense witnesses they might call and the other evidence that they might bring to the court.
One of the things in this case, David, which maybe you can explain whether this is unusual or not, is that the babies at the centre of these allegations are not going to be named. There are reporting restrictions, quite tight reporting restrictions on this case, aren't there, at the moment?
The fundamental principle of the courts here in this country is that we have what they call open justice, where everyone gets named, the defendant, the witnesses, lawyers, everyone involved in the case is named, and the public get to see those names and they know who it is. But in some circumstances, the courts can order anonymity. You know, a typical one is that, you know, victims of sexual offences are given legal anonymity. It's unusual, though, to have adult witnesses in court granted anonymity. But in this case, an order has been made doing that, because the view of the court and the judge in the case is that will allow those witnesses, that their evidence will be better for the court if they are granted that anonymity. But what that means, though, is that the babies have to be given anonymity as well, because if the babies were named, then that would lead to the identification of their parents. And so it's an unusual situation. It's not unheard of, but it is quite unusual.
And David, just tell us about the run-in that I think that you had when you were a younger reporter.
It was a case, it was probably very early in my career, it was probably early 90s, I think. One particular piece of evidence that had come out was that the accused, the defendant, was alleged to have used a power drill in his attempt to dispose of the body of his victim. So I filed my report, and now at the time, this was the sort of late 80s, early 90s, days of sort of, you know, if you want to go and watch a film, you have to go to the video store and hire a video. And there was this phenomenon called video nasties. These were straight-to-video, cheap horror films that were being sold in video stores. And one particular one was quite notorious, was a video involving a murderer who used a power drill. And the name of the film was Driller Killer. Anyway, we had a fairly excitable news desk on the paper I was working for, and they, recalling this, decided they were going to grab the reader's attention by running the headline, Driller Killer Horror, on my report. So that went out that afternoon, and I went back to court, and to my sort of dismay, the defence team are on their feet, waving a copy of my paper to the judge, complaining about this headline. And the judge then, that awful moment, turns to the press bench and says, "Is the reporter from the Evening Leader or Today?" And all the press bench then turned straight to me. So I can't deny it. So I have to confirm that, yes, I am. And the judge says, "Well, you better go and call your editor, because I might want him to come to court. I'm going to go and have a read of this." So the judge goes off to have a read of my paper. And I phone the desk and say, "Get ready, you might need to come to court." Anyway, went back. The judge came back after having probably had a cup of tea and a biscuit and a read of my report. And he said it was okay. He said it was all right. He said, because while the headline was a little bit lurid, the report underneath makes it clear what part the drill played in the evidence. And he said, furthermore, he said the jury have heard themselves what part the drill was meant to have played in the evidence, so that they wouldn't be unduly influenced by this headline. So big sigh of relief for myself, and the editor probably no doubt happy not to have to come to court that day.
And I think that's the key for any reporter, isn't it? That if you're writing a sentence and then you think, oh, this might be sensationalising it slightly, you have to think, what have the jury heard? And have the jury heard that? And that's the way you temper your reports all the time. That's my first rule.
The next clip is really one of my favourites. We enjoyed talking to Julia Quensler so much back in episode 6 that we released a longer version of our chat with her as a special bonus episode. Julia is one of the best and most well-known court artists in the UK.
So we were really pleased when she took some time away from her pastels to speak to us. Here's the clip.
It's contempt of court in this country to sketch in court. It's a law that's stood since 1925. The same Contempt of Court Act, which says you cannot take a photograph in court, says you can't sketch in court, and it's stood almost 100 years now. Mm. Prior to that, they did allow sketching and photography in court. So it's a combination of memorizing and written notes, because I don't want to keep my head down writing. I like to, you know, look at the person or people that I'm drawing. It's important to not only get, hopefully, a good resemblance, but also body language, demeanor, all of that adds to it.
So what do you write down?
If it's someone I've never seen before, obviously I'm writing down features, hair, clothing, etc. But also I'm looking for the expression on the face, etc., etc. One time, 13 people entered the dock, one long, long line of defendants.
Oh.
And this,
that's,
they
a,
came
that's
in.
Called a multi hander, I think.
Exactly. They came in, they filed in at about 10:30, and I had to have the drawing ready in time for the 1 o'clock news. So that one was a real challenge.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
As well as featuring evidence from the trial, we've also spoken a lot on the podcast about how important court reporting is, especially for the pursuit of open justice. And no one is a bigger advocate of that than Tim Crook, a media law expert and professor of journalism at Goldsmiths University in London. In episode 7, he told us all about how he started his career as a court reporter at the most famous court in the land, at the Old Bailey in London.
Well, it was the first major specialist job I had in journalism. In 1981, BBC Radio Scotland commissioned me to report every day of a spectacular and fascinating trial of an Oxford graduate with a working class background called Howard Marks, who specialised in smuggling cannabis into the United Kingdom, although clearly he was going to deny this. And at the end of it, he was acquitted. He was the kingpin, bringing in over £20 million of marijuana. Customs and excise interrupted the whole operation. Cannabis started washing ashore in the Western Isles. Poultry farmers used it as bedding for their chickens, and the hens began to behave very strangely.
Oh my gosh.
That's hilarious.
I was hooked day by day. First time I'd had the chance to report every minute of a trial. The chance to be in a courtroom and witness the drama was extraordinary, and I was completely drawn into it and committed. And I was enormously lucky because IRNLBC knew that I was there, and they asked if I could file for them because I was only broadcasting to Scotland. And I said yes. And then when that trial finished, IRNLBC asked me to be their full-time Old Bailey Central Criminal Court correspondent and also cover the Royal Courts of Justice and anything else legal. And I said yes, and for 16 years, that was my life. So
it's arguably the best court in the land, the Old Bailey, isn't it? It's often that where the most serious cases go.
Absolutely, and it's remained so. And I had the privilege to report the most important cases, particularly terrorism. I mean, late 70s, 80s, early 90s, terrible terrorist crimes on the mainland, as well as what was going on in Northern Ireland. And then I would be there covering the trials of people responsible, including Patrick McGee, who nearly succeeded in destroying Margaret Thatcher and the entire British cabinet with the Grand Hotel Brighton bombing in 1984.
And is there still an interest in like young reporters for being court reporters?
Absolutely. When they have the chance to be in court and cover significant trials, they realise the importance. They experience the drama and the intensity. One of the difficulties is that the industry is under a huge amount of pressure, has been for 20, 30 years, and there isn't the economy to support the number of specialist court reporters.
Nowadays, news desks want reporters not just to file one story a day. And the problem with being a court reporter is you've got to listen really to all the evidence over the full day to take and make an accurate report of what's going on. In that sense, it's kind of an investment. It's an expensive skill.
It's an expensive skill, and it's a quite brilliant, demanding skill. It's a skill where there is no right to fail. And what you're doing with your podcast, what is unique and groundbreaking, and all credit to you, historical and vitally important.
Now, the next clip is from part two of our chat with experienced broadcaster Matt O'Donoghue. We've chosen it because it was really relevant at the time to what we were faced with when we started the podcast, and that was the difficulty of reporting on a really long-running trial. Matt spoke to us about his experience of reporting on some really serious court cases back in episode 8.
The really difficult thing to do over a trial, particularly one like this, which is so expansive and that goes on for months. I mean, this is, what is it? Something like a 6-month trial. I was thinking about what other cases I'd done that had gone on that long. And I think every day of a 9-month trial in Liverpool for, it was Joyce and Amos, the two gangsters who ran the Gooch crew in Manchester, who were up for a murder. I mean, it was horrific. It was Tyrone Gilbert's wake, who was a victim of gang violence, who'd been shot. And then at that wake, people were out on the street drinking and they drove by and they shot at all the mourners and took another one out. And it was a massive trial. It went on for 9 months. There were, I think, 10 co-accused. The dock was full. And every day you're thinking, how can I maintain the interest in this? You're fighting against everything else that's on the agenda that day. And you want your story to be on because you're personally invested in it and you think it's important. Otherwise, you wouldn't have pitched to have been assigned to it in the first place.
Any big court cases that spring to mind?
Oh, God, there are loads that have really stuck with me. Yeah. Charlene Downs. That case is one that has and always will stick with me, not least because her parents I got to know particularly well. And they would call me up after their day in court and we would chat through stuff. The backdrop of it is a young girl who went missing in Blackpool and was never seen again. And the accused were two guys who ran a kebab shop opposite the drag club in Blackpool called Funny Girls. The contention from the prosecution was that Charlene had been murdered. She'd been groomed. She was part of a grooming network of men who then used her. And then something had happened. She'd been chopped up. And basically, the people who went for their kebabs on a Saturday night was the prosecution's contention had consumed Charlene without knowing it. And the details of that case were horrific. If you do this job properly, you empathize. And that's the only way that you can do it properly. Otherwise, you become an automaton and your copy has no soul and your broadcasts have no heart.
In episode 11, we spoke to another seasoned court reporter, John Harris. He runs the main news agency in Manchester called Cavendish Press. And he's spent his entire career reporting on the goings-on in courtrooms across the northwest of England. He shared some of his favourite stories and told us why his career in the courts has earned him the nickname Mr. Justice Harris.
My name's John Harris, and I'm the principal at Cavendish Press, which is a news agency which sources stories and pictures for various newspapers, websites, magazines, etc. The reason for the Mr. Justice nickname is because for many, many years, our agency has covered primarily court cases, tribunals and inquests.
And a lot of our podcast so far, in the guests that we've had on, has talked about why court cases now are maybe not covered as much as they used to be. But maybe that's not true. Maybe you're in there all the time with your teams and covering everything.
It is true that many, many, in particular, magistrates' courts and smaller crown courts were traditionally covered by solo freelancers. And they would cover cases for the local papers. They'd be on what's called retainer agreements, where they get flat fees every month, and that would be for the local papers. Unfortunately, the retainer agreements were scrapped sort of in the late 90s, early noughties, which has since made it difficult for freelancers to exist in the courts. I mean, we still do the courts because we supply pictures as well, which does help when it comes to covering courts worthwhile. But sadly, those who don't do pictures will struggle, and inevitably many freelancers have either retired or just given up because we're living on fees which were agreed in the 1980s.
But you still every day have someone, don't you, at a magistrate's court?
Yes.
Or a number of magistrates' court across the northwest.
Yes.
And you do get some great stories.
Yes.
Every day. Well, from them.
Well, when I first started out 30 odd years ago, my first boss always told me that the best stories are always in the magistrates' courts, and the reason for that is a lot of it just reflects real life. These are incidents which people relate to. The offbeat, the quirky, sometimes the very, very funny. Yeah. You will get black comedy cases at the magistrates' court, which you might not necessarily get at the Crown Court. They're great courts to cover.
When you're sending into those, are you sending with a specific story in mind? Because
yes,
you've seen something on the list. You're not sending speculatively.
No. It's always about targeting particular cases which I think are going to be interesting. There's one this morning that we're having a look at about an 83-year-old man who's up for harassment and criminal damage to a neighbour's adjoining wall. So it's potentially quite interesting. He's 83, very unusual for an 83-year-old man to be before the court. He's accused of climbing over a fence and shouting abuse at his next-door neighbour.
Tell us, I don't know, best magistrate's court story.
It is still one from about 30 years ago. I was covering another case and I had to go and do a door knock on it. And what happened was that I went for a pint at this particular person's local pub afterwards. And
keeping up those journalist traditions.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Glad to hear that.
It was a lovely little pub in Drax, near Selby it was. It was a real country pub, hardly anybody in there. The landlord asked us who we were and said who we were and what we were there for. And he says, oh, you don't need to worry about that load of rubbish. Why don't you come to our court case? And I was going, and obviously I was thinking, yeah, right, okay, here we go. It was in the days of strict licensing laws. And the landlord was up for serving people after hours. What was interesting about it was that the police sent in three undercover officers to expose this thing. But what was more interesting was that all three officers got absolutely sloshed during this investigation, one of whom was so drunk that he actually fell over whilst trying to, in effect, arrest this landlord. And obviously we went to cover this case. All the officers gave evidence and they all had to admit drinking between 5 and 8 pints of Old Bailey beer, which is what they were serving Old Bailey, which is a very strong beer.
Oh, brilliant.
Beer. The famous headline in the Daily Mail being Passing Out Parade. Yeah, that was the headline. That was without doubt my favourite.
That's it for episode 48. We hope you enjoy just some of those brilliant guest moments. Liz and I will be at court until the jury's decision is made and they announce their verdicts.
We've no idea how long that'll take, but we'll bring it to you as soon as it happens.
You can give us a rating and you can share the podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Lucy Letby Trial, or follow me at Radio Caroline, or send us an email at thetrialoflucyletby@gmail.com.
See you then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.